The war in Yemen was in fact a combination of three battles. Everyone knows about the first war, the resistance by the Ansarullah against the Saudi invasion and the forces supported by Mohammed bin Salman. The second war is a conflict between the Houthis and the Al-Qaeda militants who are supported by Riyadh to make Yemen insecure and crush the Houthis who are Zaydi Shias. But we've heard less often about Yemen's third war. On April 27, 2017, Abu Rabu Mansur Hadi, Mohammed bin Salman's crony, who claims to be Yemen's president, deposed Idarus Qasim Abdul Aziz Al Zubaydi, the governor of Aden, the capital of former South Yemen. The reason for his dismissal was the vast relationship between Zubaydi and a tiny nation on the southern shores of the Persian Gulf. The newly established United Arab Emirates. After the dismissal, a large crowd of Zubaydi supporters took to the streets. The supporters were mobilized by the UAE. Hadi was informed through Saudi agents that the United Arab Emirates was behind all of this. It wasn't the first time that Hadi and bin Salman were informed of the UAE's spontaneous measures. Last winter, Hadi, who usually resided in Saudi Arabia, decided to visit Aden, that was the largest city controlled by the Saudi-backed militants. When Hadi's plane approached the airport in Yemen, as a rule of thumb, it requested to land, but the airport in Yemen didn't allow the plane to land. So the plane had to land kilometers away on the island of Socotra. Hadi was enraged. He fired the director of the airport and ordered the forces under his command to besiege the airport. The UAE-backed forces opened fire at Hadi's forces at the airport. So the rift that everyone was already aware of opened wider. The rift between the UAE and Saudi Arabia,
بين الإمارات والسعودية.
Bin Salman had sensed the danger and initially decided to act as the big brother, an impartial mediator to forge reconciliation between Hadi and Abu Dhabi Crown Prince, who's also the UAE's deputy commander-in-chief, bin Zayed. 2 weeks later, Hadi left for Abu Dhabi, but talks took only 10 minutes. Bin Zayed reminded Hadi that the UAE has paid a lot of money to liberate Yemen. And Hadi told bin Zayed that the UAE acts like an occupying power in Yemen, not a country that's deployed forces to liberate it. Hadi decided to fire the UAE cronies and his government, which itself was designated by Saudi Arabia. Bin Salman was supposed to teach the UAE a lesson and force them to support Saudi policies and stop going their own way. Finally, on April 27, 2017, bin Salman gave Hadi the green light to punish the UAE. Idarus Qasim Al Zubaydi, the governor of Aden, and Hani Ali bin Breik, one of the ministers of Hadi's cabinet, were fired. the UAE reacted quickly. A massive protest in Aden. This time, the groups in Aden sought independence in South Yemen.
انقسمت اليمن على مدى عقود إلى قسمين شمالي وجنوبي.
For decades, Yemen had been divided into two northern and southern parts. North Yemen, whose capital was Sana'a, gained independence from the Ottoman Empire in the last year of the First World War in 1918. But South Yemen remained under British control for several decades later. Aden, the capital of South Yemen, was an important port for UK colonial ships in West and South Asia for decades. 1969, South Yemen became independent. 21 years later, in 1990, South Yemen became united with North Yemen. 30 years later, the unity was about to collapse due to the UAE's meddlesome policies. After the war in Yemen, Houthi forces backed by the UAE and Saudi Arabia managed to occupy parts of what was called South Yemen in the past. North Yemen was still in control of Ansarullah forces, so South Yemen had turned into the only shelter for the Saudi-backed rebels. In January 2018, Zubaydi announced that the process of deposing Hadi in Aden had started. Now, a new front has opened for MBS. On January 28th, all administrative buildings of Hadi's government in Aden were captured. The SDC controlled the city. The spring in 2018 started while the Emiratis made another new move. The beginning of the threat to the Western interests in Bab al-Mandab Strait. After China came to the region, everyone got worried. Now, the Persian Gulf Arab states consider control over the strait a major part of security in their region. Soon, Turks, Japanese, and Americans showed up for trade and gaining a foothold on the African side of the strait. The carnage of people in Yemen, famine, disease, hunger, and ruining all welfare indices were the costs that the Yemenis had to pay so the UAE could progress. With former U.S. President Donald Trump's mediation, on August 13, 2020, the UAE signed the normalization deal with the occupying regime of Israel. The STC immediately reacted. Bin Brake, who was the commander of the STC forces, much before the agreement, had announced in winter of 2018 that he would support any reconciliation agreement with the Zionist regime. If the UAE had put its own interests as well as the occupying regime's interests in the same basket, it can continue to enjoy the U.S. support and Bin Salman wouldn't dare to interfere. A large part of Yemen's coastal territories, from Aden to the Red Sea, is occupied by the UAE and UAE-backed forces. The UAE is not that interested in the depth of the Yemeni territory. The goal is merely to control the sea. But why? On the southern coast, China has a naval base in Djibouti. The proximity of the UAE and the Israeli regime preserves U.S. interests against China's expansionist policies in Bab al-Mandab Strait. The U.S. cannot deploy forces in every region on its own. Huge military costs have already triggered protests inside the United States. That's why the U.S. put the heavy burden of the uprising in Yemen on the Saudis' shoulders. Bin Salman purchased U.S. weapons to crack down on the uprising. The U.S. was in fact killing two birds with one stone. Trump has said time and again, if Arabs want the U.S. to help them militarily, they have to pay for it. But Saudi Arabia isn't a long-term investment for the U.S. The title of the custodian of the two holy mosques bars the Saudi rulers from openly revealing their ties with Israel. What's more, Saudi Arabia is too large. The ideal situation for the U.S. and Israel in West Asia is to divide the countries into smaller nations the size of the UAE. The Israeli regime can't directly interfere in Yemen. It needed a middleman because of the small size of Israel, its limited military capabilities, and the hatred of Muslims against the occupiers of Al-Quds. The middleman should have been as reliable as Saudi Arabia, and at the time, it should have been so small and fragile that it won't pose any threat to Israel in the future. There is a policy in the U.S. that's officially called QME, or the so-called Qualitative Military Edge of Israel. Based on the policy declared by the U.S., which has been accepted by all U.S. administrations, Israel should have the highest military power in the Middle East. That's why Israel was against the sale of super advanced F-32 fighter jets to the UAE, even during the time Abu Dhabi was normalizing ties with Israel. Israel's opposition to the UAE's possession of such weapons proves the point Iran has mentioned for years. Israel doesn't have a problem just with Iran. Israel has a problem with every Muslim nation in the region that has military edge and the capability to respond. Israel even has a problem with countries that have extended hands of friendship to it. For sure, Israel's desirable condition for the region is to see it divided into many pieces. Turkey, Saudi Arabia, or the UAE, it doesn't make any difference. Bigger nations are definitely top on the agenda, a reality people like Bin Salman will find out too late, when the Saudis can't do anything about it anymore. In the middle of all this, Yemenis fall victim to preserving Israel's alleged edge in the region, so Bab al-Mandab will be a safe route for the West to transit goods and energy, a world that's aging and is aware that it's going to perish soon. The tiny nation of the UAE was allowed to play the role of Washington's advisor and agent in the region. An example that the U.S. used the UAE as a tool can be seen in this case. The launch of the Amal or Hope Mars rover that belonged to the United Arab Emirates. It belonged to the UAE because the UAE had paid for it, but the technology doesn't have anything to do with the UAE. And it's obvious why. The UAE needs to have missile industry to launch the satellite. It needs to have ballistic missile technology. The U.S. hasn't allowed any of its allied countries to have missile technology. So, the UAE doesn't have the right to have missiles. Why? Again, the answer is hidden within QME. preserving Israel's so-called qualitative military edge in the region. Yet, the UAE is useful for Israel and the West as an infantry in crisis-stricken Yemen. The UAE spends money so the Yemeni coasts will be controlled by forces it backs and sets a firm foothold for Israel's spy agencies in the strategic Bab al-Mandab region. Israel does the work under the name of the UAE. Milking a cow is an idiom in English, meaning taking advantage of other people's resources to achieve your own goals. These days, the West has found a new way to communicate with third world countries. Let them spend, but for us. The UAE has nothing to do with Mars. It is too small to be preoccupied with such missions, and it doesn't have the necessary human resources. The UAE has the same situation in Yemen. Until December 2019, the Yemen war had cost $29 billion. It was a huge burden mainly on the shoulders of Riyadh and Abu Dhabi. The UAE doesn't have military forces either, so it had to make military service for men under 30 years of age mandatory. In 2015, 45 of UAE soldiers were killed in Ma'arib in an attack by the Houthis. These are the new costs the Emiratis weren't aware of. The humanitarian costs in the Emirati society are higher. The society has never experienced democracy and doesn't consider the government an elected body. What the society witnesses are the decisions by hereditary rulers and the bodies of the sons who go back home in body bags. The trade towers in the UAE are in an even more fragile situation. They're almost defenseless in the face of Houthi attacks. The slightest strike on the UAE will take the international economic spotlight away from the tiny nation. The UAE takes all the risks while the US doesn't even spend a dollar and doesn't lose even a single soldier, or in other words, the US is milking the cow. On February 9th, 2020, the UAE military forces withdrew from Yemen, but it didn't mean that the UAE's presence in Yemen was over. 90,000 militia forces in Yemen are fighting for the UAE and with the UAE's funds. What's more, the UAE has left a heritage in Yemen, the STC, or the Southern Transitional Council. It's the UAE's proxy force that seeks Yemen's disintegration and an independent South Yemen with Aden as its capital. The UAE withdrew from the military conflict in Yemen and left Saudi Arabia to its own devices. At the same time, Sudan, that's under the influence of UAE petrodollars, downsized its forces from 15,000 down to 650. Now, the UAE has established a firm foothold in the region. It abandoned Saudi Arabia, so it pays the financial and humanitarian costs of the conflict on its own. But the UAE's proxy forces will benefit from the war. They had put Saudi-backed Hadi's rule at risk. The UAE's desirable outcome was providing a secure path for trade with the West and the Zionist regime. Both coasts are controlled by the Israeli regime, either here in Aqaba or here in the Mediterranean. They need this strait to be connected to Asia. The UAE and its proxy forces have controlled one side of the strait. The conflict followed an economic siege on Yemen. While the Emirati sheikhs construct fancy high-rises, Yemeni children go without food and medicine and have ended up in this situation. Many of them die of extreme hunger. But as long as Bab al-Mandab has trade values for the West, the deaths of thousands or even millions of Yemenis isn't considered a serious problem for those who wield power and wealth, and it's the media's job to shed crocodile tears. No one will remember thousands upon thousands of men, women, and children who've lost their lives in Yemen. The last popular force in Yemen, the Ansarullah, is the only bastion that's standing up against arrogant powers in the world, but it's an unequal war. The economic siege of Yemen is a silent massacre that's supposed to win the war for the West. These days, Saudi Arabia is the big loser of the war. After 3,000 deaths, heavy damage to the oil industry, and billions of dollars paid for the war, without any hope to win, launching more airstrikes and killing more Yemeni children are the only things that Saudi pilots can do perfectly well. But the UAE has so far ditched Saudi Arabia very well. Even though it paid part of the billions-dollar bill of the war, in 2019, it pulled out of the war and left Riyadh alone. ...108 Emirati soldiers have been killed. It is a major and unprecedented blow in the history of the UAE, but compared to the Saudi loss, it isn't so much. It's also received the best chunk of the cake. The ports and the trade chokeholds like Aden Port, Bab al-Mandab, and Socotra Island, namely everything that was once controlled by the British colonial power. The UAE betrayed Saudi Arabia, but with the U.S. support and the promise of reconciliation with Israel, the sheikhs in Abu Dhabi have to always watch out. It isn't clear when the U.S. and Israel will betray the Emirati sheikhs. In this game, everyone is ready to blow the right strike at the right time. The UAE already knows that it's shorter than the other players, so it will have to fight tooth and nail for its own survival. The story will continue. وهذه القصة مستمرة.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners, because as you know, this is the day of Tasu'a, the 9th of Muharram. It is a very sad and very solemn day in the Islamic calendar, the eve of the day of Ashura, the day when Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his loyal companions and many of his kin and family were brutally murdered on the plains of Karbala. And it is a day which renders the heart to pieces, the hearts of all of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, as well as the freedom-loving and freedom-seeking individuals of this world. And for this reason, we would like to once again offer our condolences to all of you. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a very important question. And that question is this. As you know, Imam Hussein was preceded by his brother, Imam Hassan, who was the Imam prior to him. And we see that apparently there was a difference in the conduct between these two Imams. One of the Imams, he made peace with his political opponent, Muawiyah, whereas Imam Hussein, he did not, and his actions of both parties led to ultimately to the Battle of Karbala and the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. So the question I want to ask is this: what was fundamentally the reason in this difference in the conduct of these two individuals? Why did this occur? So the most important answer and the most significant answer that we can give to this question is this: is that in general terms, the conditions, the political conditions of the two imams, alayhim as-salam, was distinct and different. To be more specific, their opponents were different. The opponent of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, Muawiyah, he was different and distinct in his conduct from Yazid, the opponent of Imam Hussein. How so? The main reason was this, that Muawiyah, as history tells us, he tried his utmost to at least apparently show people that he was preserving the Islamic, the very basic Islamic virtues and laws, and he apparently, even though behind the scenes he might have been doing every kind of transgression and committing every kind of sin imaginable, but at least he never openly and apparently showed that he was doing this, and he tried to put on the facade of goodness to him. However, this was not the same with Yazid. He openly committed transgressions, very basic transgressions, which are contrary to some of the very basic laws and virtues of Islam. He openly drank wine and intoxicants. And he openly and very, adamantly, committed homicide and killed. And very openly denied revelation, right? There's a very famous poem which has been ascribed to him, in which he very openly and categorically denies the possibility of wahi or revelation and the prophethood of the prophet, right? So these kind of open transgressions led the imam to, very openly, it led to a, very similar reaction in the sense that the imam openly opposed him. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the reasons for the uprising of Imam Hussein in contrast to his brother Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In Britain, the former Chancellor Rishi Sunak has admitted taking money from deprived urban areas in order to give it to other parts of the country. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Rajiv Sial. The piece is titled Rishi Sunak Admits Taking Money from Deprived Areas. In Britain, the former Chancellor Rishi Sunak has admitted taking money from deprived urban areas in order to give it to other parts of the country. The former Chancellor, who is standing to be Prime Minister, made the claim last month while speaking to Conservative Party members in Tunbridge Wells in Kent. In video footage obtained by the New Statesman, Rishi Sunak said, "I managed to start changing the funding formulas to make sure areas like this are getting the funding that they deserved. We inherited a bunch of formulas from Labour that shoved all the funding into deprived urban areas and that needed to be undone. I started the work of undoing that." Tunbridge Wells has a Tory majority of 14,645 and has been held by the party since the constituency was created back in 1974. An analysis by The Guardian in February found that under Boris Johnson's levelling up agenda, some of the wealthiest parts of England, including areas represented by government ministers, were allocated 10 times more money per capita than the poorest parts of England. The analysis brought together the 4 main levelling up funds for the first time: the Future High Streets Fund, the Community Renewal Fund, and the Towns Fund have been fully allocated, while the Levelling Up Fund has allocated £1.4 billion, with a further £1.8 billion still to be announced. A total of £4.7 billion has been allocated in England across the 4 schemes so far. It is not clear from the video to which funding formula or levelling up fund Rishi Sunak is referring to. Labour's Lisa Nandy, the shadow levelling up secretary, said, "This is scandalous. Rishi Sunak is openly boasting that he fixed the rules to funnel taxpayers' money to rich Tory shires. This is our money. It should be spent fairly and where it's most needed, not used as a bribe to Tory members. Talk about showing your true colours." Rishi Sunak's Conservative colleagues, however, were divided over the footage. The Foreign Office Minister, Zach Goldsmith, said, "This is one of the weirdest and dumbest things I've ever heard from a politician." Jake Berry, the chair of the Northern Research Group of Tory MPs, said that, in public, Sunak claims he wants to level up the North, but here he boasts about trying to funnel vital investment away from deprived areas. He says one thing and does another, from putting up taxes to trying to block funding for our armed forces and now levelling up, Berry, a Liz Truss supporter, said. But Rishi Sunak's supporters rallied around him, with the Conservative Tees Valley Mayor, Ben Hoochan, arguing that Johnson led the party to electoral victory on a pledge to invest in areas that have been ignored at the expense of urban cities. The Public Accounts Committee, the Parliament's spending watchdog, has been critical of the lack of rules over the Towns Fund. The Levelling Up Fund is supposed to create economic growth, but with no clarity of what that means and no measurements of success. Responding to Rishi Sunak's words, Meg Hillier, the chair of the cross-party Parliamentary Affairs Committee, told The Guardian, "This is evidence of a deliberate decision to change public spending priorities based on who you know. Pork barrel politics is unfair on taxpayers, and the areas that don't get the funding cannot even begin to qualify for the cash in a game with no rules." Rishi Sunak is reported to be trailing Liz Truss in the race to succeed Boris Johnson as Prime Minister, as party members begin voting. But there is still a month of the campaign to go, with the result to be announced on 5th of September. Both candidates appeared at another hustings event on Friday evening, 5th of August, this time in Eastbourne in East Sussex, where they took questions from Tory members. Rishi Sunak's campaign did not dispute the video, but argued that he had moved the cash from inner city areas to towns and poorer rural areas. A source said, "Levelling up isn't just about city centres, it's also about towns and rural areas all over the country that need help too. That's what he changed in the Green Book, and he will follow through as Prime Minister." They added, "Travelling around the country, he's seen non-metropolitan areas that need better bus services, faster broadband, or high-quality schools. That's what he'll deliver as Prime Minister." The government was criticised last year for the terms of the Levelling Up Fund after it emerged that dozens of Conservative regions were placed in the top tier for assistance despite their relative affluence. Ministers responded to the backlash by saying that they did not have any of the political influence suggested and have left the scheme in the hands of civil servants. In 2020, Robert Jenrick, the then Community Secretary, admitted that he and a junior minister approved payments to towns in each other's constituencies from another government fund earmarked for deprived areas.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to the program Islamic Upbringing. This is a program wherein we provide you with necessary information to be able to provide necessary grounds for your children to flourish and to attain perfection, which is the ultimate goal of Islam. Well, today in our studio we have with us Brother Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Brother Miqdad is a researcher in the Hafza Ilmi of Qom, who will be providing us answers on the basis of Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. A very warm welcome, brother.
Thank you so much. Jazakallah.
Brother, we have a question today that is very important, and we see that in many, many youth, and that's the quality of being self-centered. Is being self-centered a normal thing for youth? I mean, I see a lot of teenagers, they pay too much attention to themselves. Is that okay?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, I guess the question is related to more relating to loving yourself in the sense that children or youth, teenagers like to Some people would call it self-conceit as well.
Yeah.
Is another word used for this. So basically, paying too much attention to themselves. And you find that they, if I want to make a cliche, they will spend hours in front of the mirror, for example, combing their hair, putting on perfume, make sure their clothes look nice, that they kind of pay very
More
much attention
about
to
themselves,
their exact
yeah.
looking good, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So first and foremost, in itself, this is not a bad thing. Paying attention to oneself in itself is not necessarily a bad thing. This is very important to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go out and condemn your children or get angry at your children or even kind of make fun of them that they're paying too much attention to themselves, because in itself it's not a bad thing. It's
okay.
a very natural thing that happens when you become at that age. And it's actually a very normal human trait to have as well, to pay attention to ourselves.
Okay.
The only difference is that adults have learned to hide it. We all are like this. We all love ourselves and have a lot of self-conceit. But we just have learned in our maturity to hide it. When mm-hmm. they become teenagers, they don't hide it. And so it's not a bad thing as such. When does it become negative? When does it become a concern for parents?
Yes.
When as a parent you should be really concerned? There's a few kind of symptoms, or you could say signs.
Okay.
One of them is when this leads them to be careless about others. That's very important.
Okay.
So the moment this self-attention or this self-conceit leads them to be completely careless of others, so it's me over others and me paying attention to myself at the expense of others. So the moment that is seen, then that could be a source of concern.
Okay.
Another thing is excessive attention to one's physical body.
Okay.
But this is in excess. So paying attention to how we present ourselves, that's very normal.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it becomes very excessive. So for example, you find youths going to bodybuilding, but
okay.
at a very heavy bodybuilding.
Mm-hmm.
Doing exercise and doing bodybuilding is fine. We find some youths would go into bodybuilding just so that they can show their body. That's
yeah.
going to exercise. They will take proteins, for example, going to a very serious and...
So here it's a matter of concern.
That's a matter of concern.
Okay.
Or for girls, for example, to dress up in an extreme way.
Okay.
Crossing the boundaries of halal and haram as well.
Mm-hmm.
These are matters of concern that need to be addressed.
All right. Well, you said that paying attention to your own self as a teen is not a problem in general. But when then this care about yourself becomes excessive or at the expense of others, it's a matter of concern. And there's also a matter of concern when youth pay excessive attention to their physical body, whether it's boys paying more attention to their body to show off the body, or whether it's girls when they are crossing the boundaries and kind of being less modest. Well, brother, I'll continue the discussion with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Hey, stop! I got a better game!
IRIB English Radio presents a priceless gift to parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5 years old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. We're talking when teenagers pay a lot of attention to themselves. Is that okay or not? Yes, brother, you said that paying attention to oneself, when that crosses the limits, it's a matter of concern. But as such, it's not a matter of concern.
So the reason why we said it's not a matter of concern when it's, or rather put it this way, paying attention to oneself is normal. You have to realize that the reason why Allah has created us in the way that we love to see our own success, mm-hmm. it's because we have a thirst within ourselves to reach perfection. This thirst is a very normal thirst. It's actually a very strong motivation for our own growth and our own journey towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So in fact, I would go to the extent of saying that parents should actually encourage youth and teenager to realize how important they are.
Okay.
And how their goal in life should be very high. They should aim very high. Mm-hmm. And this requires them to say that you are important, and out of the love that you have for yourself, use it to
grow explore high. Yourself.
Explore yourself, explore your journey, explore your goal, explore the...
To attain perfection.
Understand how your goal is unlimited.
Yeah.
But you see, the crux over here is that at the same time as you mentioned this, you have to realize that, you have to tell them that, but you are not limited to a body. Right? Okay. So when we talk about paying attention to yourself, you want them to realize that there's more to just your physical body. And this is what you want to avoid, them going to the extreme of paying attention to your body at an extreme level.
Okay.
This is very important. So this is why the examples I mentioned, for example, they're more related to your youths or teenagers taking extra or more than extra care or more than extra attention to their physical appearance, which is something you want to get them out of it. But the motivation behind it, which is attention to your own self or self-conceit, into certain extent is a very good thing if it's directed, if it's channeled, if it's guided towards the right way. And this is why I say that it's very normal, and it's for parents to use that to drive the teenage forward. So the mistake that a lot of parents make is that they tell their children, that's a very haram thing to do, don't pay attention to yourself, that's arrogance, that's ujb, you have to be sincere, you have to kind of help others and put others before you,
mm-hmm.
which in its place is good, but this is not the kind of approach you want to have with teenagers. You want to tell them, no, on the contrary, you're very important. Allah has created you for something amazing. You have an amazing body, but you remember also you have an amazing soul, an amazing intellect, and these things can achieve amazing things with this. And so you want to have the same kind of communication, be on the same wavelength with the children, with the teenagers, and make them realize that this self-conceit that you have, or this self-attention to yourself that you have, this needs to be channeled to a higher goal and a higher purpose, which is very much possible. And this is a very important point. Always remember to speak with them with respect, give them dialogue.
All right, dialogue. So showing them that they are extremely important or they matter is important. So parents need to take care of that. They don't have to even be kind of parents. This is haram. This is not allowed. They have to show their children always that they are important. Brother, I'll continue the discussion with you after a short break. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, Allah will be merciful to his servant for his intense love for his child.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing from IRB English Radio. We're talking about teenagers who pay a lot of attention to themselves. Brother Miqdad, how difficult do you think it's for a mother to ask her teenager, like, not to pay excessive attention to herself? Who is herself, or like maybe her friends or someone in the society, is surrounded by those, like we have beauty clinics today, even if your lips are normal, still women, especially young girls, prefer to go and, you know, do all those injections to, I don't know, modify their lips, modify their cheeks and all. So is that okay, really, if your teenager wants to go for all that, all those modifications, even if they look normal?
Many times that you see, the reason why this happens is because of kind of peer pressure that occurs within society. So society today defines perfection based on your physical appearance. And you find that the way social media works, the way the movie industry works, the way advertisement works today, the way even workplace works, you realize that society has brainwashed people to think that perfection lies in physical appearance. Yes. Everything rotates around how you look and mm-hmm. how you present yourself and how you talk and how you can behave in a social context using your physical beauty. In
true.
In women, even more to a greater extent, but even in men as well. And so this is what drives young girls or young boys as well to do things in order to match this expectation of society.
Yeah.
There's a lot of studies. I'm not talking just Islamic studies. I'm talking about research in the world of psychology, in the world of education, in the world of youth studies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the listeners are more than welcome to go on these very important articles, scholarly articles, research,
okay.
and to uncover how much society has destroyed the way we think related to our physical appearance. And social media, even worse, with the advent of selfies and putting photos of ourselves all across the internet, you find that it's become a massive challenge, not just for religious parents, but generally for society. The body image has become a very hot topic. And so the solution for us as Muslims and generally for people is to first and foremost realize that this mm-hmm. is a misunderstanding.
Okay.
This is a misconception that our perfection lies in physical beauty. Shah, it's a long discussion, so maybe perhaps I can leave this for the next session. And shall we can wrap it up over here. And just to end, just put this across, that one of the things that leads girls and boys at this age to pay too much attention to their physical appearance is this social perspective that they have, or this idea and attitude that they've learned from society, that
yes.
body image is what leads one to perfection, which is not correct.
Yes, and that's thanks to social media for all that, providing that image and providing that kind of mindset in the minds of youth, not only in the minds of youth, in the minds of everyone, I guess, whosoever is using social media platforms. Thank you so much, brother, for joining us. Thank you so much to your listeners for being with us. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you have any questions for us or any suggestions, comments for a program, please feel free to contact us on EnglishRadio@irib.ir. You can also search us on our social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. In case you want to listen to our programs again, you can go back to our official website. That's www.parstoday.com. Until another session, fi amanallah, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.